Voices of VR podcast.
Hello, my name is Ken Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my coverage of Snap Lens Fest 2025, today's episode is with the second place prize winner of the Lensathon for the Spectacles Hackathon that happened for 25 hours in the couple of days leading up to the Lens Fest. So this experience was called CartDB, and what the experience was, you could look at a barcode, it would scan it, and then it would pull up nutritional information, other metadata, and kind of like more of a shopping app experience. They had a number of different products during the demo, which were curated down, and then they had specifically updated their own information on the small subsection of products that were available. This is not something where you could just take any product because, you know, they have to get licenses for the database. But the whole idea is using barcodes that are on these objects and how can you start to pull in metadata from these objects. And Snap did bring me down to cover both the developer conference, the LensFest, all the different announcements, as well as to participate as a judge in the Lensathon. So after all the 10 different teams had a chance to develop all their products, I was a part of the team that went through and saw all the different demos and was involved in the deliberative process. And so I wasn't involved in the final judging. That was a separate team. But I wanted to see all 10 of the different demos. And in the next episode of 1676, I'll have a little bit more comments on some of the other types of applications that were developed. Just for context, the prompt that the developers were given was they wanted the developers to develop a spectacle lens using one or more of the new capabilities that had just been announced with the Snap Cloud, with their capabilities of the Superbase integration. And so being able to do different database integrations, also real-time multiplayer types of experiences, and then also like the use of some types of edge functions. And so there's a lot of ways that they had to offload this computer vision processing into a Docker container. And so basically have this wired up function to kind of send that information out into the cloud and then come back with the metadata that was stored in their database. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Guillaume Nigel and Utom happened on Thursday, October 16th, 2025 at the Snap Developer Conference in Santa Monica, California. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
I'm Guillaume d'Agence. I come from France and I create psychedelic lenses for spectacles.
I'm Nigel from Germany and I'm also creating lenses for the spectacles and always try to push the limits of what's possible on platforms like that.
Hi, my name is Utom. I'm from Delaware. I build mixed reality applications for medical education.
Right. And you had one more person from your team. Maybe you can also give a little bit of an introduction for who was not here.
Yes. So the fourth member is Nicholas Ross from LA here. And he is also building crazy stuff. And he was like the heart of our team, I would say.
Yeah,
like with him, it was directly clicking. And we all was knowing like that we are like working great together. Yeah.
Nice. So we're kind of following on from the hackathon. And yeah, I always like to get a little bit more context for each of the different folks I'm talking with. And so I'm just curious if you could each give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into working in XR.
Yes. So I come from a 3D artist background. I was creating 3D models and selling them online, but it was not the end of the world for me. I was looking for something more and I found that in the Snap ecosystem.
Yeah, for me, it's I'm a software engineer. I'm coming full from the tech side. I was working in telecommunication before and also in biology-related parts, like bioinformatics, and was from there going into AI. Yeah, I was just like falling into XR because there's a opportunity to like combine all the different experiences I already had and combine it in a nice way.
My background is a little bit all over the place. I went to school to study mechanical engineering and physics, and then I studied character animation in Vancouver Film School, and then I did this wonderful program called ITP, which is at NYU Tisch School of Arts, and that really opened up my world. And I started doing things in the interactive mixing digital and physical. You know, during my time at ITP, I was experimenting some stuff. I ventured into XR when I created this application called Play Gummy, which is an augmented reality origami application. So that is sort of like, you know, culmination of all my diverse backgrounds, my interest in origami, my interest in mathematics and geometry, and then mixed reality. And that's how it all started, like, you know, originated my journey into XR. And that was like my first project. And then during the pandemic, you know, I did this, you know, very impactful work for College of Dentistry at NYU, where I created this local anesthesia simulation module for the oral and maxillofacial surgery department. And that was a big hit. There's like 1,200 students that was used. It was made part of the curriculum. There are more than a dozen universities in the U.S. that are currently licensing that product.
Nice. And so I'd love to hear a bit more context for how each of you started to encounter the Snap Spectacles, and then if any of the other previous projects that you've worked on. And yeah, just to hear a little bit more around that journey and some of the different ways that you've started to already experiment with the Snap Spectacles.
So for me, I was in the hospital because I had been hospitalized after a motorcycle accident, and I found the Spectacles website, the old Spectacles website, the previous generation, and I was immediately conquered. I wanted to have them, so I contacted them and started to build some lens for them to recognize me and maybe send them to me, but they did not, even though I sent them a lot of emails and along the year. But when they announced the new Spectacles on the subscription last year, they sent me an invite, and so I subscribed, which was a kind of a leap of faith for me, but clearly it paid off. And right now I'm very happy to be here and to continue building the future of AR.
And you have a really amazing shader program that you have. I don't know if you want to say anything around that in terms of experimenting. What's it like to be able to scan a room with the Snap Spectacles and start to put a number of different psychedelic trippy shaders on them?
Yeah, so it's based on the World Mesh, which is my favorite component of Lens Studio. The first thing I wanted to do when I got the Spectacles was seeing if it's possible to 3D scan a mesh of the environment. And when I saw that it was the case, I started fiddling around with the pre-made shaders and from the library. And once I began to understand the node-based shader system, I began to code some custom shaders with Claude and do some setup to project them on the world mesh. And yeah, it was very, very satisfying to be able to make this. And it's a kind of a new thing. It's what makes me think that Spectacles is much more than just a feature set. It's clearly some platform where you can build anything and where everything becomes possible, even the most craziest dreams of application of or delirium. Because this is kind of a delirium, it's kind of a trip. It's the first ever numerical trip application created, and I want to push this concept even further, so stay tuned, and maybe in the future it will become something bigger.
For me, the Spectacles is like the device I was always dreaming about, the device I always wanted to have. And how I was getting there, or how I was hearing about it, I probably need to go a bit more back. So as a kid, I was always wanting to have devices like that, but they was not available, and I was dreaming about it. And my first contact with XR was, I guess, 2016 or 17 with the Oculus Quest, which I was getting there. But as a developer, I didn't have like all the opportunities I wanted to have there, because it was quite a new device, and it didn't support like a XR or augmented reality. And that's why it was fast going into, like, after some time going to the edge of a room, and I didn't use it for some years. And as soon as the Meta Quest 3 was coming out, I was starting to use it, and I really loved it. But for me, I really want to have some real-world programs, apps. I want to really change something and not just build games. And yeah, I was going to the AWE in Vienna last year, and that's where I first heard about the Spectacles. And I directly had like 100 project ideas in my head, and I directly registered for it and got accepted for the program. And since then, I just try to push the limits every day with technology.
My first experience with Spectacles actually started with the 2024 version. So, I mean, I saw some, you know, wonderful videos and experiments of the 2021 version, and I always, you know, dreamt about having that device, but it was a very closed beta, and I was not part of the network then. But luckily in 2022, I got an opportunity to participate in a Lens Fest. I mean, I was not part of the Lensathon, but I was so inspired by the community and the talent around me. I actually built a lens during, like, you know, my time on that day. Like, for a couple of hours, I built a quick lens and I shared that with, you know, some of the Snap employees, and they really liked it. And they actually, you know, made me, you know, part of this network. And, you know, I got my hands on the current version of Spectacles last year at the Snap Partner Summit, and I just fell in love with the form factor and, you know, what you could do with a device like Spectacles. And I actually won a Spectacles in the City Hackathon earlier this year in New York. We got the first prize, where we actually created a multiplayer experience of, like, where you can actually turn any cylindrical pillar-like object into, like, a gamified reverse Tetris, where blocks will be falling from the top, and then you, along with your four other friends, can just go around and, you know, try to kind of touch the blocks of one color. So each will be assigned a unique color, and you just try to, you know, touch your hands. It's a very fun sort of, like, you know, Twister slash, you know, like a brick game, Tetris, you know, game. And yeah, people really loved it, and I tried to, you know, keep building, like, fun lenses. And this time around, I wanted to build, like, a game, but because of the prompt, you know, we ended up building something much more utilitarian, useful, but also we added our, you know, spin on it. We made it, like, you know, really fun. I mean, I can talk more about, you know, what we built in a further question, but yeah, that's how I, yeah.
Yeah, so the prompt was to look at some of the new capabilities of the Superbase, like basically having a database backend with Postgres, but also some of the edge functions and other features that were being newly launched as a part of the Snap Cloud. And so with that constraint, it did sort of lean a certain direction to sort of do an experience that uses a database. It kind of leads to more utilities rather than game-based projects. Although you could do a game, but I think with the quick 25 hours, there wasn't really much time to really, you know, fully flesh out something too complicated, but still really quite impressive to see what people managed to pull off within that time. So very curious to hear where the kind of brainstorming process started, where you kind of ended on the CartDB, where you're essentially using the Snap Spectacles to scan a QR code and get lots of metadata around these different products from more of a shopping-based context. So where did the idea begin? And just talk a bit about the kind of brainstorming process.
So at first, we all had very different ideas and very different concepts that we wanted to put. And Nick Ross took the lead and made us write everything on the board, and we exchanged ideas. And I think it's Nigel that came up with the idea of scanning barcodes. Afterwards, I said that we should do a grocery list, because my mother had said to me that I should make a grocery list app so she can do the groceries and stuff. But yeah, all the database and stuff, it's more them that who have handled it. Me, I have more worked on the whole UI and UX parts of the application. But yeah, I think we can say a big thanks to Nick Ross, who helped us to kind of put all our different sides and merge in the middle into a concept that satisfies all of us.
Yeah, he was a really great project manager, and was like also like having the big picture of everything, and always being good in orchestrating all the to-dos. So it was really great. Yeah, it was basically about using this database, and we wanted to focus on really that part. And where do you have more data than in the real world, in the supermarkets, or maybe even at other place, at warehouses or something like that? There's so much data available, which we can now, with our lens we created, just scan and understand and utilize in some way. I see there's really a big potential for that, like not just in the supermarket, but like I said, also really in warehouses, being able to scan all these type of codes. Yeah.
So just a quick follow-on, because you came up with the idea of the barcode scanning. So where did the idea come from that this would be a possibility? Were you aware that the data sets were available and would be easy to access? And just give a bit more context for how you came to that idea.
Yeah, so basically barcodes or QR codes or any type of these codes is not meant for us human, right? It's for machines to read and use this data for something. But because now we are wearing this machine in form of a glasses in front of our head, we are able to use these codes. We can read these codes. We can interact with these codes. So it's really great way to interact with these codes, being able to use this data. And what we was doing was, there's a big provider available who is able to find these codes on images. It's called Scanlet. And they don't provide directly an open API or a server which we can use for that. They provide some tools for directly pushing it to devices like Android or something like that, but that was not possible on the Spectacles, for example. So what we was doing was we took the Linux program they provide, and we was writing our own server in C to call this program by utilizing an API that we provided in a Docker container. And it was quite good in performance. The only problem we had right now was the internet connection, which was adding some additional response time on top of it. But yeah, it was cool.
So you have a Docker container that has a Linux that's running a C program that you had to run. You have the glasses and you're just holding up and you're looking and you're seeing a barcode, and then is it just automatically sending up those images? Let me just walk through the pipeline for where the image is going from the camera, and then how does it get to this kind of web of all these different services and then come back with the data?
Yeah, so basically it's first you choose your preferences, like if you're region or something like that, so that the app can guide you also in these type of decision making.
So different dietary preferences that you have.
Exactly. And then it's just like every time a new image is available, he's sending that to the server and getting the information back if he found on this image a barcode or not. And always after we got the response from server, that's the time point where we are available to send a new picture to the server. And then we was getting this information about if the barcode got scanned correctly. And if there was a barcode, we are searching for that barcode in our database of products we provided using Superbase. And yeah, show that product to the user. Show information about prices, descriptions, but also like information about how healthy this product is. Because we were thinking about, if you can maybe tell more about it, that for example in Europe there's like a score, Nutri-Score from A to F, like if a product is healthy or not. And we were thinking that's a great way to also visualize that directly to the user, to give also not just information about the price, like what he is buying right now, but also about the background.
Just one quick other follow-on in terms of the Linux server. Was that a part of Superbase as well, or is that something else that is another service that you had to use?
It's an additional service. So we had some trouble because also this toolkit was provided to us now first time, so we was not directly able to use internet module to call the server directly from the Spectacles. So what we was doing was we was using edge functions in Superbase and was using this edge functions basically as a proxy to call our Linux container, a Docker container in the cloud.
Okay. Yeah. So that helps to just get a bit of sense of the magic behind the scenes of everything. So, okay. Thanks for that.
Cool. So I would like to add a little bit more on the kind of information that we are showing when you scan the barcode. What we wanted to do is like, we really wanted to kind of like, you know, add more critical information that is not currently available in like other food scanning apps that are currently available. And when we're thinking more about it, you know, we thought it'll be nice to show the food pairings, right? Like what foods go well with this so that, you know, it's beneficial to you in terms of like the nutrient absorption. And also, you know, we provided something like mealtime, which is like when is best time to eat this product. So these things along coupled with the Nutri-Score and, you know, having that sort of like, you know, calories and other information, we thought, you know, it'll be like in a more informed choice available for the user. And, you know, like making things like, you know, much more sort of like, you know, bland without any sort of like, you know, spirit. We thought that might be boring and, you know, it'll just be like any other food scanning app. So when we came up with the name, you know, CardDB. You know, the way I said it, it sounded like CardDB, right? So immediately I started to think about like how we can present this in a way that, you know, it's fun and in a lighter tone. You know, it's not just, you know, educational, but it's also, you know, playfully pulling your leg off like, oh, hey, too many calories, or it's like 80% air and 20% regret or something like that. So we use ChatGPT to come up with like a bunch of lines which are, you know, fun, and, you know, we could sort of like, you know, and then we use some kind of like AI tool to kind of like make them sound like the rapper Cardi B. But again, like, you know, it's something close. It's not exact replica of her voice. I mean, I'm being very cautious not to, you know, get into like any trouble. But yeah, it was just sort of like a fun exploration for us to kind of like, you know, present like important information, but in a fun and playful way. Actually, this kind of approach, it kind of dates back to one of the projects that I did during my time at IDP, where I actually used Valentine's cards to educate people about science. So I made cards on mathematics. I made this sort of like a fractal pop-up book where, you know, it'll be like, oh, this is like my heart, and, you know, my love for you is like a fractal. It keeps on growing forever. So it's a little bit cheesy, but I chose Valentine's messaging to communicate science. So this kind of like, you know, tone or thing of like, you know, communicating critical information in like a much more fun and playful way has been in my, you know, like playbook for quite some time. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the user interface experiences of this app was that I found myself staring at a barcode. And usually when you scan barcodes, there's like a beep that says that it's like actually been scanned, but there wasn't any sort of beep or indication that it had successfully captured it. And so I found myself kind of like staring at it and waiting until there was some sort of like feedback of whether it was going to work or not. Sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. And
this is very good feedback. Thank you. Yeah, we will make sure that it make a beep. And I had something to tell. Did you know that the nutritional score or the Nutri-Score is a French invention? So I brought with me this idea of the French Nutri-Score, and I hope it's going to resonate and that you Americans going to be able to tell in one click if a product is good for you or not. Yeah.
Nice. And this is something that is invented in France and is pretty widely distributed in France and in Europe and beyond?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's also distributed in Europe now, yeah. But it's come from France, yeah. It's very useful when you're in the supermarket, and from a glimpse of an eye, you can tell if a product is good for you based on A, B, C, D, E, and colors. And we could even imagine that we could do a Nutri-Score Z for the very unhealthy products like the cigarettes and stuff. Yeah.
Not that it's always going to dissuade people, but at least the information.
But at least it's funny. Yeah.
Nice. And so as I was scanning it, I found that, you know, sometimes it would work and sometimes it wouldn't. And as I was talking to people afterwards, and they're like, oh, well, I knew that the camera was on this side, and if I hold it up to a way that actually isn't intuitive to me, where like you would actually have to hold it off to the side and like optimize to the camera on the left, where that was probably part of the reason why I wasn't getting clear interactions. But some of the people who work at Snap are like, oh, well, I knew that the camera was here on my left side or right side, and they would hold it up to that. And I was like, okay, well, that's not obvious for me as a new user coming in that I would know that.
This is one of the things I hope the most for the next spectacles, is that they do like the iPhone Pro, you know, a bunch of cameras with different focal lengths, so you could even zoom with your eyes and look for things that are very far away. But yeah, the cameras currently, they are made for the tracking system. So basically, you have to be very close to have the details and the focus onto a barcode. But I'm pretty sure that in the next gen spectacles, we would have a way better barcode scanning mechanics. Mm. Yeah.
I think there's also a lot of potential to improve the scanning by tweaking some of the parameters in the container, which is running right now. Yeah, it was just about time, I guess. But we was happy that it was working exactly on time. So we just had 24 hours, 2 hours of sleep, maybe three. And so it was really exactly like working maybe 1 hour before we needed to finish it. And we was quickly driving to the supermarket, trying to get one video in. So definitely. I think there's even, it's additional to the camera, I guess it's definitely possible to change some of the parameters in the scanning itself.
Now, when I tried the demo, you had a number of different products that were there on the counter. most of the ones that were there were, you know, in the system and working. Is this the type of system that you were pulling in databases where you could literally scan any barcode that was out there? Or I guess I'm wondering if you were creating like a small set of like just 10 entries in your database, or if this was something that you could literally pull off any product and scan it and it work because it's pulling in all these other databases.
So actually, we was building our own set of barcodes connected to information about these because we wanted to have our own database. We can control the data and we know what we want to show. But sure, it would be great to maybe integrate like different APIs for that in future to be able to maybe support all the different type of products which is out there directly. On the other side, if you, for example, would have a grocery store who tries to use this to engage users to buy things there, then you would have anyway your own database of products. So I guess it would be even realistic to have it like that right now.
At first, I was thinking about we could integrate Open Food Facts database, which is a very, very huge database which could scan anything in any country, basically. So, yeah. I think that would be the perfect kind of database.
Yeah, it seemed like this hackathon was encouraging the use of pulling out what I would normally associate with like web applications or things that are kind of using these services in a way that you could have like on a mobile app or a web app, but this is all on the spectacles. And so just curious to hear any reflections on the affordance of having augmented reality and these computers that we're wearing on our faces have quick access to these different types of applications that would normally require either a phone or a web application to be able to gather this information. So having more contextual information so that you could perhaps quickly get this information in the context and make a decision in the moment based upon something that would be using the affordances of computer vision and augmented reality. That feels like this is a type of use case that feels very unique to AR just because you already have the camera on your face and you could technically already use your phone, but it's another extra additional steps that if people are already wearing this, that you could have a little bit more of a streamlined experience that feels like it's kind of lowering the gap between having this contextual computing capability. So just curious to hear some of the reflections on the implications of this type of trajectory.
Well, that's what I told the guys when we weren't sure if we would win a prize. I was like, guys, we can be confident because we have a killer app. It's the kind of application that makes you like a cyborg, you know? You're in the supermarket, you scan the barcodes with your glasses and you see the information directly into your retina, so directly into the brain. So yeah, I think this is kind of an avant-goût, a pre-taste of the future of humanity, the future of the augmented human.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I couldn't have said it better. Like, we are just like able to do things right now. Just like the glasses could be part of us. So I can't add something. It's a great answer, right? Yeah,
I think speaking about the affordances of, you know, augmented reality in the format of, you know, spectacles, I think there is a lot of scope to explore the depth aspect of our surroundings. And I think that is like a key differentiator between a technology like spectacles and a standard like in a phone or a web app, where, you know, information can only be presented in like, you know, 2D, even though, you know, you can have like, you know, camera and, you know, depth kind of, you know, experiences, they're not like true depth, right? It's just like a 3D information rendered on a 2D screen. But here, you know, you could use like, you know, your spatial environment around you to kind of like, you know, render more contextual information. And, you know, even like the product itself, like, you know, it's like most of the products come in a box and it's very easy to kind of like, you know, render like multiple informations on like, you know, different sides of the box. And even maybe get like a sneak preview of what's inside the box using a technology like augmented reality without even like opening it. And you can actually see, you know, what is the actual size of the product. Like, I know in the Japan, there is a rule that, you know, you can't have an image of a product of different size than what it's actually in the box. So whatever image that they printed is exactly the same size of the product. But in the US, there's no such rule, right? Like, they could just simply have like a giant piece of granola and then they can simply add like a fine print saying that enlarged to show texture. Come on. Right? But with augmented reality, you can peek through the box and then see what's inside, right?
Nice. And so where are you going to take this application next? Are you going to continue to develop it? Or do you feel like you're, now that you've won the second place prize here at the Lensathon, that you're going to take the prize money and kind of disperse and go about your merry ways? Or just curious if you're going to continue to build this out.
Actually, I love these guys. I'm so grateful for destiny, for life, for chance to have met them. And I think this is a dream team. I couldn't have found better friends, partners. And if these guys want to keep going on with this relationship, I'd be glad to continue building with them, to continue to refine this application, the user interface, the user experience, and maybe even build new projects together and work together and build stuff. Build the future.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, we just spent like 2 days maybe together, and I would really call these guys here my friends already. It was really great to meet them. So I would definitely like to work together more. If it will be KDB or maybe other products in future, that doesn't matter. It's just sometimes you feel like this is the right people to work with, yes. And so you go this way.
Some kind of alchemy.
Yeah, exactly. Also Nicholas, who is not right here now, Nicholas. But here.
Nicholas is a legend. Big respect to Nicholas. We do not forget for Nicholas. We think about you. Don't worry. You are here with us.
Just the only problem which would happen with this product is that we used the Scanit library, like we said, and it's not public library, so we need to have a license for that. And the other challenge would be additional that... this type of things you probably want to do directly on device. And on spectacles right now, that could be a challenge. Not just because it was 24 hours now, but also because we don't get the really deep, low code, low layer access to the hardware. We just basically like proxy our expectations through TypeScript to the hardware. And this type of things, like really scanning this code efficiently, for that we would need to have access to the hardware. Or this type of things maybe need to be provided by Snap itself. But probably they will start to support maybe QR codes first, because that's the most interesting for most of the use cases. Barcodes is always like a different type of thing.
Yeah, that's true. The closed SDK is really, sometimes it can be a pain. For example, I created some custom locations where you go with the spectacles and scan a place, and wanted to export the custom location mesh to Blender to block a more cleaned version of the room. But it wasn't possible, and there's a lot of limitations actually with the closed SDK, and I really hope in the future they open. And if they don't open it to the public, at least maybe they can open it to some devs like us. Trust us.
Yeah, I'm sure that there's always going to be a thing around privacy and what are the privacy implications of taking scans and making it available for developers. And I think if you're making site-specific things that are for that, we're in complete control. But yeah, I'm not speaking on behalf of Snap, but I know that that's part of the consideration is looking at their overall values of privacy and what may or may not be revealed to people. As we have these technologies that are scanning all these things, then what happens to that data is something that is of concern to know there's the integrity of that. So that'd be the counter argument for some of that.
I get it, but I don't think like that. I think that all these scans should be like decentralized and open to the public, and that eventually we should have a full 3D scanned map of the entire Earth in a kind of decentralized network. I'm not a very technical kind of guy when we talk about database, privacy, and all this stuff, but I'm a tech lover, so yeah, that's why I wanted to have access to all the data and be able to do more stuff. Yeah.
Nice. And I don't know if you had any other comments in terms of any aspirations you have in the future.
Sure, totally. I mean, I really love this team. Everyone has such a strong, capability and skill and whatever they do. So definitely if the team is interested in, you know, taking this to the next step, I already have, you know, some ideas on the applications of this technology. I know, like, we presented this as, like, you know, more for, like, you know, your grocery cart or, you know, for, like, you know, health related purposes. But I think, like, there's other opportunities, like, you know, what Nigel has mentioned earlier about warehousing. And also, I mean, I just thought about it that, you know, we could actually revolutionize in the way how books are consumed in this, you know, new century with the advent of mixed reality technologies. Like, you could actually use a barcode from, say, a library book and actually show summaries or sort of, like, you know, books written or, you know, films that were made that were inspired from this book. So there's actually a lot of, you know, opportunity for us to, you know, take this technology to the next step.
Great. And finally, what do you each think is the ultimate potential for XR, all these head-worn augmented reality headsets and AI thrown into the mix as well, and what all those things put together, what the ultimate potential of that might be and what it might be able to enable?
Yeah, as I say, I was talking earlier about the augmented human, about being a cyborg and stuff. And just imagine if you could see in thermal vision or see in night vision, you know, touch the Wi-Fi, see the Wi-Fi, see the radio wave all around you. It's just giving you basically a sixth sense, a seventh sense. That's what it's exciting about, and that's what I'm looking forward to see, is a society where what will augmented humans do in such a society? Because what we consider today as entertainment, work, everything's probably going to be shifted in a way we can't foresee, and this is exciting, and I'm curious about the future of augmented reality.
I have something to add. That's a great point Guillaume has mentioned, because recently I heard a really old episode of Radiolab where they're talking about color and how, you know, certain organisms have these, you know, additional cones and, you know, rods in their eyes that let them see, like, different, you know, like, electromagnetic spectrum that we're not even visible. Like, for example, the mantis shrimp. Right, mantis shrimp, I think it can actually see a lot of other frequencies that we can see, and we don't even know what it's seeing. You know what I mean? And, you know, even for that episode, they did something really cool that, you know, whenever, you know, talking about, like, the colors, they try to represent that in music, right? So what would, say, a dog see, because, you know, it has, like, you know, one less cone, so it can only see, like, blue and green and no red. So they try to represent a dog's vision in music. So that was a really interesting way to actually represent things that, you know, we as humans cannot perceive, right? So bringing them into, like, you know, our realm and our senses and our capabilities of our senses. And I think, you know, tools like, you know, augmented reality have the potential to do that, like things that are not visible or, you know, things that you can't hear or, you know, other senses that, you know, we're not even capable of. Like, you know, imagine a neural link is interfaced with, say, some kind of, like, you know, crazy vision glasses, and then you're able to suddenly sort of, like, you know, see things that are not even possible. Yeah,
I would just connect to what the other ones already said, because I think that's a really great view to watch on with, like, because data is usually, like, something really abstract, which is maybe sitting on some servers, which we can just experience maybe through a display, maybe being able to talk through it, to it, maybe by smartphone nowadays. But this real potential is, like, we can really start feeling data soon. Like, let it be through the display first, but there'll be so much more sensors and what's the opposite of sensor, like, what is giving me feedback to my body, like,
transducer?
Yeah, like,
actuator?
Yeah, like, something which is really, like, giving us the opportunity to feel data around us,
haptic,
like,
feedback.
Yeah, that's a really great way to view on it. I like that. I also really closely work together with a company, it's XR Bootcamp right now, and they changed the branding of it to Sense AI. And I think that's a really good term to call it. What is the future of XR and AI in future? It's sensing things. It's like changing how we experience our environment for being able to have all these new senses. Yeah.
Nice. And is there anything else that's left unsaid? Any final thoughts you have to share with the rest of the XR community?
I'd say if you lack ideas and you have the white page problem, just play some video games about futuristic tech like Deus Ex, Cyberpunk, Metal Gear Solid, and you will find an idea.
Nice.
I would say, considering the last days and also the experiences I collected over the last days, over this last year, it would be try to catch up to the Snap ecosystem, because I never felt so much appreciated as a developer when I did here at Snap. It's really amazing, like how they give us all these opportunities. And sure, sometimes they push new features out too fast and maybe it's breaking some stuff. But at least they are really open about it and they share everything with the developers. And they also hear on our feedback. So yeah, that's a great thing.
Speaking about, you know, senses and perception, I have more sort of like, you know, philosophical, you know, outlook on that question. And I feel that like how we are literally, you know, inventing uses for technology like augmented reality, I feel like friendships are actually something that will augment us with, you know, different perspectives of, you know, different people, different backgrounds. And I think Snap has really nailed that part along with the tech, where they are actually so open and, you know, considerate and respectful, and they're not judgmental, and they're like so welcoming, regardless of which race you're from, which background, which education, they don't care at all. And that is something that adds such a strong impact to me. And I try to take that message in whatever I do.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining me here on the podcast to help break down a little bit around your journey of the Lensathon this year and the second place prize of the CartDB. And yeah, I just feel like that, you know, it's an impressive integration of a technology stack that allows you to kind of imagine a future where you can seamlessly pick up a product and look at a barcode and have lots of different metadata pop up in the context of a screen, and feels like a prototype of a type of experience that we can expect as we lower the barrier between this contextually aware computing and the different types of information for us to make decisions as to whether or not to get different products. And, you know, with the top product being Decisionator, where the AI just makes the decision for you, you're adding the layer of the metadata that you can leave those decisions up to the consumer. So just different approaches for different ways that the AI technologies are starting to integrate into these different types of applications. So yeah, really appreciated hearing a little bit more around the process and design of the CartDB. And thanks again for joining me here on the podcast to help break it all down.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much for having us here.
Thank you very much, Ken. And I hope you had a great time at LensFest and you got to kind of, you know, speak with, you know, other developers, and I'm looking forward to, you know, hearing to their episodes as well. Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Voices of VR podcast. And if you enjoy the podcast, then please do spread the word, tell your friends, and consider becoming a member of the Patreon. This is a listener-supported podcast, and so I do rely upon donations from people like yourself in order to continue to bring this coverage. So you can become a member and donate today at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.